maybe we could talk a little bit about what's going on over in Europe. You know, they tell us that things are better, things are a little bit better in France. And basically now, of course, Greece has been able to borrow some more money. So things are going to be looking up. It looks to me like certainly the economy in Greece and Italy and Spain and Portugal are collapsing. My understanding is that even France is having real problems. Their auto production is down dramatically from a few years ago. And that certainly in many of the countries in Southern Europe, over half of the young people are simply unemployed. And a lot of the college graduates are unemployed. People are trying to get out of Greece and out of Spain and these other countries. But where are they going to go? That there's an increasing feeling, certainly, of futility and almost as if the whole thing is beginning to implode. What are your thoughts about what's going on in Europe today?
Well, certainly it is still a bit of a roller coaster ride, and we see the ups and downs on a daily basis. For example, yesterday or earlier today, I suppose, we were seeing the Stoxx Europe 600 falling close to 0.4 percentage point. Closing at 286.01, so this ahead of Bernanke's speech at the Federal Reserve. So it still is tracking and trending with various policy announcements, and it's very much still dependent on basically what they're being told by various governmental figures, both in Europe and in the United States. So this is interesting. What we're seeing really coming into play is not only that 2013 is going to be a year where markets are driven predominantly by policy announcements, but that those policy announcements are working internationally, so that what Bernanke is saying at the Fed will affect markets in Europe in the same way that what Draghi is saying at the ECB can affect markets in the US, or what Shinzo Abe is doing in Japan can affect markets across the world. What we're seeing is the interconnection of these markets through the policy that's being driven, that is increasingly driving the monetary and fiscal policy of these various countries, that in turn is feeding into the market. So it is all coming from these political centers of power. And I think this is ultimately worrying, because as we know, the political centers of power are and always have been nothing more than bankster establishment puppets, and they are simply just different sides, perhaps different sides of the New World Order debate, but they're still on the same side. At the end of the day, they still all want the world government. They're still all working towards it, and that's what we're going to see. So whether Europe is trending up or down at the moment, I think only goes to show that, again, what we're seeing coming into play is an increasingly international perspective where, unfortunately, basically global government is already kind of being slotted into place behind the scenes through the international financial architecture.
Well, of course, certainly the majority of the people in the world don't really want a world government. Most people want to maintain the sovereignty of their nation. My concern is, of course, that they are going to destroy our economy simply because of debt. I mean, basically, of course, nothing is being done. We're having massive increase in debt. And, of course, you can't keep spending money you don't have. Last count, 46 cents out of every dollar the U.S. Treasury spent was borrowed. How long can you continue creating prosperity by borrowing money?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think we're going to find out the answer to that question until someone actually comes along to stop this debt madness from going on, and I don't see that stopping anytime in the near future, or at least not until the freight train falls off of the rails.
But won't this eventually destroy the value of our currency?
That's exactly what it will do. That's exactly what it is doing. It's just taking a very slow time at it right now.
But nobody wants to tell the people the truth. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is James Corbett, and he's coming to us from Japan, giving us the overview of what's coming down the line. Certainly, comes from Canada. He's certainly as much American as I am, because America and Canada are joined together. Certainly, they have been for many years, common culture, common goals. And certainly, our government works fairly closely with Canada, and I believe the Canadian government is really more or less subservient to Washington, D.C., but certainly James is over in Japan giving us a view of what's taking place in Japan. what's actually happening to the economy in Japan. Certainly my understanding is they have one of the largest debts in the world. Certainly their debt is certainly 12 or twice the general GDP over there. Is that correct?
That's right. It's surpassed 200% of GDP a while ago now, so it is steadily trending upwards. And really, this is just a reflection of the fact that Japan has been in this this post-bubble economy for the past 2 decades plus now of stagnation and deflation. So now we have Shinzo Abe coming out, the newly elected prime minister, saying that the new target is going to be for 2% inflation, which is almost unthinkable in post-bubble Japan, where there has been basically no inflation for a couple of decades here. And how are they going to do this? Well, basically by printing yen until the sun don't shine anymore. And that's exactly what they are doing. That's what they've promised to do. Markets are already responding. Japan's Nikkei has been trending upwards for a month now, basically since the election. And we just saw a major new stimulus package unveiled here in Japan this past week. So they just keep continuing to talk about and then to turn on the printing presses, and the markets are responding accordingly. And the Japanese yen is plummeting and the stock markets are up because they love to hear about that. More money means more of these funny pieces of paper being basically pumped into the markets, which is always good for the...
But don't they understand that this will destroy the value of the life savings of the average Japanese who's worked so hard to accumulate for his retirement? Don't they understand what inflation brings to a nation? Haven't they ever read things like Fiat Money and Inflation in France, a classic written back certainly at the time of the French inflation there, shortly after the French Revolution? And it was certainly the massive inflation that led in part to the French Revolution.
Well, I think that what the ultimate strategy here is to try to ride the tiger, as it were, and to hopefully maintain just that right level of inflation where the money supply is growing, so there's room for growth in the economy, but not so much that it actually ends up turning into hyperinflation.
Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sam is simply talking about what's going on over in Japan, where they're inflating the currency. In other words, basically, they're printing more money, and the value of the yen is falling. And basically, of course, Japan has been in a recession for almost 20 years now, and this is certainly going to continue. But they hope that they're going to be able to just print the right amount of money to produce prosperity and not get inflation. And of course, it's never worked throughout all history. I can never think of any time this ever has worked, because nobody wants to do what is necessary, and that is face the fact that you cannot produce prosperity by producing inflation, yet that's exactly what they're doing here in America. Do we have any idea, James, how much the Federal Reserve System is funding other central banks throughout the world? We know for a time that the Federal Reserve was giving money to the central bank over there in Europe, which of course was giving money to the various national central banks. What's really happening as far as the Fed is concerned, or is that all secret?
Well, unfortunately, as we've discovered over the past several years through the different the commission hearings that Ron Paul and others have been grilling Bernanke and his cohorts at, we've discovered that, yes, most of this is secretive. And we can know in some vague general details about the types of money that is going overseas and that we know is going overseas, but we can't know in specifics exactly how much and to what institutions. And basically, of course, the argument ultimately is that, well, this would undermine, you know, faith in the system if we could identify which particular institutions were receiving money, et cetera, and it would cause, you know, potential bank runs, et cetera, and all of this type of thing that they try to use to justify this cover of secrecy they want to put over the banking world. But yes, I mean, ultimately, we don't know how much money is being shipped out the back door and is going into Europe. But we do know that, for example, in the trillions of bailout, various different bailouts that happened in the wake of the collapse in 2007, 2008, we know that lots of that money, perhaps even a majority of it, was being shipped out to Europe at that time. And again, the justification is that it is such a globally interconnected economy now that if you don't help and bail out the banks that need it in different parts of the world, that will blow back and end up biting you. So that if, for example, there's some sort of catastrophic failure in Europe, that would tank the American economy. So the Federal Reserve, of course, wants to help out their buddies in Europe. And that's exactly the type of reasoning we're getting. And, of course, now, if people were sick of the fiscal cliff type of talks that were just happening in the U.S., now we can sit in and get ready for the debt ceiling talks, which are now starting to kick off. And exactly as the fiscal cliff talks were basically just political wrangling between the two management arms of the New World Order vying for control, the left side and the right side, I think that's exactly what we're going to see with the debt ceiling talks. Because again, it's not like the Republicans actually want to stop the insane increase in growth in the federal government. They just want it to grow in the way they want it to grow, to benefit their friends in the military-industrial complex, for example, instead of the Democrats' idea of creating the troughs for the Social Security payments and that type of thing, which of course is just siphoned off by the corporations anyway. So again, it's absolutely meaningless at the end of the day, because we know they are going to raise the debt ceiling. There's not going to be any sort of default, but it's just a question of what political points they can score and what they can get out of this crisis as they play this political game of chicken. And this is increasingly the type of thing that is driving the global economy. And that should be scary. That should be worrying for people, that basically political brinksmanship and showmanship is taking the place of actual productive manufacturing and things like that as the driving basis for the American economy.
Well, of course, it was John Adams who said well over 200 years ago that the two ways to destroy a nation, one was by an enemy invading it, and the other was by corrupting and destroying its monetary system. And ladies and gentlemen, our monetary system is not being destroyed by enemies outside this country. It's being destroyed by enemies inside this country who are printing simply money and creating money out of nothing. Simply, they're all bank entries. There's no money there. There's nothing of any value. It's simply all bank entries, and certainly if there was anything ever happened, suddenly we did not have electrical banking, why suddenly people would wake up one morning and find that they had no claim on their money in the bank because there was no money there, because of course we really have no real money. All we have is simply banking entries, and many people think that they're fabulously wealthy. I've got $1 million in the bank, or $2 million, a fellow told me the other day. Well, I think he's in for a sad awakening one of these days. What do you think?
Unfortunately, I think that sad awakening is ever drawing closer, and it's really just a question of when it happens. But as I'm sure many of the listeners to this program know that that's about to happen. So again, it's a question of what you can do to get ready for it. And again, I think it's absolutely wise to have at least some of your savings, long-term savings, in commodities and things that you can actually physically, tangibly hold in your hand that will have value even after some sort of collapse in the phony, funny money paper markets. So again, of course, gold, silver are two of the gold standards, if you will, in that regard. And of course, we continue to see the talking heads continuing to call the current run-up in gold prices in recent years as a bubble, despite the fact that we don't see anything approaching the types of actual bubbles that we saw in gold prices in the past. For example, back in 1980 or so, when prices surged up to 800 and you had people lined up around the block trying to buy Krugerrands or whatever in New York. We're not seeing that now. We're not seeing people having even a widespread awareness that there is that gold is a viable investment option or a long-term saving strategy. So I just don't see this as a bubble. This is not a bubble. I think this is an actual reflection of the fact that the currencies are being debased, and more and more people are waking up to that. And as they do, I certainly think that they should be looking into ways of preserving that wealth long-term. And of course, hard, tangible commodities are the best way to do that, and to ensure against that type of collapse, because again, these are things that are going to have value after that collapse hits.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Here in the Central Coast of California, if you have a question or comment for our guest, James Corbett. And certainly James writes an essay every week for the Bob Chapman newsletter, and this is why we asked him to come on after Bob passed away, because he was one of Bob's choices to maintain the international forecaster for his widow. And of course, we're certainly doing everything we can to help out. If you have a question for James, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And basically, of course, as you certainly read the papers, they tell you how things are getting better, how the automotive industry is getting better. I think we put out 13 million cars this last year. They never tell you, though, that before they were putting out 18 million cars, and now we're up to 13. Isn't that wonderful? But I think an awful lot of people are buying these cars on borrowed money, because a lot of people believe the propaganda that's being put out, that everything is certainly getting better, that the economy is improving, that more and more people are buying homes. Are they even telling us now that the price of homes is going up somewhat? And for all intents and purposes, we're on the uphill side. Are we really recovering? Are we out of the recession? Have we continued in the depression? Is this simply a blind upswing that most people don't know? Is this simply a trap for unsuspecting people, in your estimation?
Well, I suppose it is a trap of some sort, because I do think that markets will be rising throughout much of the year, and I think that is absolutely a phony rise in markets. I don't think that represents anything about the underlying productivity of the economy itself. So in that sense, I guess it is a trap, and I think that ultimately when the hammer falls, it will just fall that much further once the markets have risen in this kind of phony policy-driven environment. But again, I think more and more people are waking up to the economic reality, which is important. And I think that if we do reach a certain threshold, a certain critical mass, I do believe that there is a way of, if not staving off the type of collapse in the economy as it's been built around us, at the very least, we can start transitioning into a different type of economy, something that would be not subject to the types of manipulations that we see on an everyday basis in this economy. And speaking of those types of manipulations, last week we had a call from Jerry in Spokane, who was asking about the repo rate and the reverse repo repurchase agreements and how financial institutions are able to make money off of overnight instruments. And I did actually look into that, and I do have an answer for him. Basically, the difference between the repurchase rate, basically a repurchase agreement, for people who don't know, is when securities are sold and with an agreement to be bought back at some later point. So that could be as early as the next day. So you have even overnight repos, and a reverse repo is just that exact same transaction from the other side. So it's the agreement to buy something and to sell it again the next day or whenever. And how do the financial institutions actually make money off of this if they're just selling it overnight? Well, the difference between the repo rate and the overnight rate, which is the federal funds rate that's affected by the federal funds market, can be enough for them to actually make some sort of profit off of the deal. And of course, for the average person thinking in terms of transactions of hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars once every few months or something, of course that wouldn't make any sense. But when you're talking about a financial institution with potentially millions of dollars of instruments sitting around, it can make a huge difference whether they just park that overnight or whether they actually use it in a repurchase agreement or something along those lines. And of course, there's other ways to use repo agreements, including rolling over debts, and repos can be rolled over. They can be overnight instruments, but they can be rolled over again and again, and often are expected to. So that can be another way of using those funds that are created through the repo agreement to create shorts in various instruments, etc. So there's a lot of different ways to make money off of that.
What about for the average individual? Is this for the average individual? Is this for the hedge funds?
This is very much for the hedge funds and the brokerages. This is not something that the average person would be involved in at all.
And I personally believe that the average person should not be involved in the stock market. Now, if you had a sure thing, it's all right. But unfortunately, I've known an awful lot of people who got into sure things, absolutely sure there was no way they could lose, and they're paupers today. I mean, I've heard this story over and over again. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we'll be with Joseph from Augusta, Georgia in just a moment. Well, Joseph, how are you doing? Do you have a question or comment for our guest? Oh, here, let's get... Hi, Joseph, go right ahead.
Yeah, in Spain, you know, the unemployment rate's at least 25%. And then what goes around comes around, and couldn't we face a catastrophic unemployment rate just because of the debt like Spain incurred, has incurred, you know, and then as far as people buying precious metals, no matter what their income level, everybody's spent out, and then our economy depends on people spending their money instead of saving it. Then if you save it, and the dollar is going to be devalued, you know, probably just as sure as the sun rises every morning, then you're going to lose out. So if there's anything you need, if you got the money, you better spend it. But then, in like on your money, coins, like a copper penny, is really worth about 2 cents, and they're going to take nickels out of circulation. I guess nickels are worth more than copper, but if you got coins, it's actually got some kind of metal value, even if it ain't silver or gold. It seems like if you had a bunch of nickels or something, or copper pennies, or I don't know what's in quarters. I'd have to look in a coin book, but.
Okay, let's get our guest thought on that. James, what do you think about what Joseph's saying, first of all? Certainly that we're going to have real problems as far as our currency is concerned, and certainly that maybe what we ought to do is start stocking up on pennies and nickels. What are your thoughts?
Well, again, I think commodities are definitely going to be something that we'll see people through the hard times, no matter what happens in the fake phony economy with the minting of coins supposedly being a guarantee of their value. I think we'll find the underlying value of the actual the components of these things will probably be worth, well, whatever it's worth, and it will at least retain that value. But on the note of the unemployment, certainly we do see that Spain and other of the European countries, including Greece, have just ridiculous unemployment rates up to 25%, as he's noting. But again, in the United States context, we have to take into account, for example, the stats that John Williams of ShadowStats.com puts out. And of course, he has American unemployment at somewhere around 22% when you take into account the ways that unemployment used to be counted and should be counted, as opposed to the way that it's counted in this phony system. It's nowhere near the 7 or 8% or whatever they're tracking it at these days. It's much closer to 22%. And if it was put in those terms, I think we'd realize that it's the fundamental underlying economy itself that is the problem. So I think that we shouldn't be looking at such a huge spread between Europe and the U.S. I think they're actually a lot closer than the government wants us to believe.
And I think that's absolutely right. Anything else you'd like to say there, Joseph?
Yeah, you know, like taxes are going up, you know, that's all a big lie. But, like, if the currency gets devalued, then everybody's prices are going to go up, and the government's going to, their revenues are going to decrease, even if the taxes go up, because if the dollar tanks, you know, there ain't no way to get out of it, you know. To me, it's all pre-planned for a collapse to go to one currency, this one world.
I think Joseph, I think you're absolutely right. I think if the common denominator behind everything is to take us into a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and a one-world religion. Parting thought before we let you go. Joseph?
I guess that's about it. Yeah.
Okay, God bless. Thank you very much for calling. I encourage all the... I encourage all those people down there in Augusta to listen. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly our guest is James Corbett. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we had somebody, Joseph, calling from Augusta, Georgia, during the break there, and he was just saying that over in Europe, certainly in many of those countries, you're looking at 24-25% unemployment. You're talking about Italy, you're talking about Spain, you're talking about Greece. And when you get to the young people, certainly of 24-25 years of age, you're talking about 50% unemployment. But of course, certainly our guest, James Corbett, was commenting on the real unemployment figures in America. They're simply lying to us. If you go to John Williams' website, shadowstats.com, why you find that John really believes our unemployment rate, the U6 unemployment rate, the real unemployment rate of the unemployed, the underemployed, and those who are simply giving up looking for work, is running about 22-23%, which is not that far behind what's going on over in Europe. But the average American, certainly if they certainly have a job, really doesn't understand what's going on. He doesn't realize, of course, that our money is worth far less. If we actually, our salaries now when you take into account inflation, are actually falling all across America. It's part of an austerity plan, but everything is a matter of perception. Since we're getting the same number of paper dollars in, we don't know, or maybe even getting more in, we think that we're getting more money, but it's actually the value of the money we're getting is falling. And of course, we are, I believe, in a recession, perhaps in a real depression at the present time. But the average American doesn't realize it because we're being lied to by the media. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. James, you go right ahead with your thoughts.
Well, again, I think it's important for people to understand at least some of the mechanics of how those statistics manipulations work. So again, looking into John Williams' work is valuable in that regard. But on the unemployment basis, for example, the American government likes to use the U3 figure as their unemployment rate figure. So they like to say it's about 7 or 8% or whatever they claim it is this week. And that is a figure that's arrived at by taking a look at people who have been out of work, unemployed for 15 weeks or longer, who have been actively looking for work within the past 4 weeks. And through that model, they're able to really fudge to a large degree what the unemployment is. But of course, U6 is a more comprehensive figure, which takes into account part-time workers who want to work full-time but cannot because of economic reasons. And that figure itself is much higher. That's trending around 14% or so. And then the shadow stats alternative is, as you say, about 22 or 23%. So there are different ways to calculate this figure. But basically, if you take the average person on the street's definition of unemployment, which is people who are out of work and looking for work, that would be a much higher figure than what they're trying to tell people it is. And of course, they just like to use that U3 figure because it looks nice and low, and they can convince people that the economy is in better position than it is. And of course, I think most people will understand from their own personal experience just how off those figures really are.
Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And of course, basically, we increased the employment over the Christmas holidays because people were spending. A lot of times, they were just spending money they didn't have. They were running up their debt. And so the debt, we have a very real problem with debt in America. At one time, of course, we had people who didn't buy things unless they actually had the money. But then, of course, when it came down, certainly, they convinced us why just certainly all you need to do is go out and borrow money. You borrow money to buy a house. You borrow money to buy a car. You borrow money to certainly so that you can have food on the table. You borrow money for the new upholstery, certainly in your beautiful home that you have that you can't afford. And difficulty is more and more people have more and more things they can't afford. And as long as we can borrow money, that's fine. But many of the banks now, my understanding is that some of the major banks are cutting back on the loans that they're making. Have you run into that fact, James?
Absolutely. That's very much something that's going on.
So what's going to happen, you know, suddenly if they begin not lending the money because we've been living on debt? What happens if you can't go out and borrow money that's where you did in the past?
Well, of course, that leads to a contraction of all economic activity, and that's the type of slowdown that can be the stopping of the music in this game of musical chairs. And again, it's a question of who's left with a chair at the end of the day when the music stops. And I want to posit that that's not only the people at the top of the banking system, but that's also the people who have been investing in their future, in investing in commodities and things that will have real value regardless of what's happening in the paper, phony, funny money economy. So again, I think commodities and holding real hard assets is something that people have to be looking into at least for a percentage of their savings. I understand we need the paper to function in today's economy, but we can hold some hard assets as a bulwark against whatever happens in that phony, funny money paper economy.
Hold the thought, give us a call.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices. Oh.
I think one of the hardest things for people to understand is what's really going on economically today. I was just reading an article written by my good friend Ed Griffin. I've known Ed for 50 years, and he was simply talking about how everything in our economy today is built upon debt. All of our money is built upon debt. At one time, we had money that was backed by something tangible. Today, it's simply all backed by debt. And, of course, it survives as long as people have confidence in the system. But isn't this really, in many ways, simply a great con game, the greatest con game in the world?
Well, it is, and it certainly is, because this debt fraud is being perpetrated by banksters who have been at this game for a very, very long time and know how to manipulate people and how to make them trust in the system itself, which is, I think, something that people should be wary of at any time. So I think that's really the underlying scare of the economy. And I think more and more people are waking up to this fact, but it's always a question of what should we transition onto. And I would like to argue that we should have an economy and a financial system, a monetary system that isn't just based on one type of currency. I think we need multiple types of currencies for different transactions. And people should think of commodities as money, as some store of value. But I think we should also have different instruments for actually conducting transactions. So those can be different types of instruments for different occasions. There can be electronic instruments, there can be paper instruments, there can be instruments that are backed up by various things. But I think it's when we start to think that only one type of asset or only one type of instrument should ever be used as a currency that we can be led into these types of monolithic systems that eventually link up into this regional and then this global system where we're all connected and where the pronouncements of the Japanese prime minister can have an effect on the American economy, as ridiculous as that sounds. That's really where we've been led to. And again, I think this is all part of a coordinated strategy to lead us into global government.
And I think you're absolutely right. I don't think most people really understand how well-coordinated and organized this effort is. This effort to basically undermine the fabric of our economic system, to undermine the fabric of our patriotism, to undermine the very fabric of our society. We'll be back here in just a moment with Mr. Corbett. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is James Corbett. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and James really feels that everything going on today, this planned effort to destroy the economic structure not only of the United States, but of the entire world, is really part and parcel of a much larger picture, and that is bringing about a world government and a world financial system. Now, I believe that exactly as he believes, only I believe in addition there's going to bring on a world religion, a one world order, which is why they've effectively taken God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, why they've changed the message and the music of our Christian church, and why, of course, we have the moral breakdown of society today, where one in two Christian marriages and in divorce. How could that happen if people really believe, of course, in the traditional religions of America? And the answer is, it couldn't. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and let's go to, before we get to Larry, James, I want you to tell our listeners how they can subscribe to the International Forecaster and how they can get your material as well, because I know you write your own newsletter.
That's right. If people are interested in the International Forecaster, I suggest they go to the website. That's theinternationalforecaster.com. And don't forget T-H-E, theinternationalforecaster.com. And you can find out about the newsletter. You can see previews of some of the articles and editorials that I've written and some of the other people on the staff there. You can also get a free introductory copy, and you can sign up for an annual subscription. So that's at theinternationalforecaster.com. If you want to correspond via paper, you can do that at P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And you can find out more about the International Forecaster that way. And for myself, I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. There you can find thousands of hours, literally thousands of hours of media that I've created over the past 6 years that is completely freely available for download, different articles, interviews, videos, and podcast episodes that I've created. Also, I do a weekly newsletter, as you say, and people can find out how to subscribe on CorbettReport.com.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Larry calling from Washington. Hi, Larry. How are we doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. I appreciate the chance to ask Mr. Corbett a question. In Dr. Cuddy's book, The Power Elite and the Secret Nazi Plan, on page 124, he describes something that I have never heard of. It's called a world currency unit, or a woku. And he said it was introduced in 2009 as a derivative of the exchange rates of the world's top 20 currencies measured by GDP. And it allows corporations, institutions, governments, and individuals to trade across national borders and hold foreign assets with minimal risk caused by exchange rate fluctuation. Could Mr. Corbett explain exactly what
a woku is?
It works and what it does.
All right, Larry, pardon me, James, are you acquainted at all with this concept?
As a matter of fact, I am, and if memory serves, I may have even brought this up with Bob Chapman during one of our interviews. I know I was interviewing him about different ideas for world currencies, including special drawing rights, etc. So this world currency unit, this woku idea, has been around for a few years now. I was looking into it at the time when it was first being proposed, but I'm a bit rusty on it, so you'll forgive me on that. But as that article or that the book is indicating, basically the idea is to take a basket of currencies as the underlying basis for this system. So instead of having a backing of gold or something like that, you would have maybe 20 different leading currencies, and you would use that as the basis for this woku, which would be traded internationally and used for international transactions. I don't know a lot about the specifics. I didn't look that deeply into it, but it's just another idea for international trade and settling international transactions. And we've seen different contenders for this, including the IMF's own special drawing rights, the SDR, which functions on similar principles at any rate. And I think that this is most likely to be the type of transitionary type of instrument that we're going to see on the road to some sort of truly global currency. This is the type of idea that, as far as I know, the idea is that this would only really be used between financial institutions and banks themselves. I don't think the average person would ever see, feel, touch, or understand what a woku is, but it would just be that sort of backing for international transactions, which again used to be settled in gold back in the days of the gold standard, and they're looking for some sort of new basis for this now that the U.S. dollar is not what it once was, and I think the writing's on the wall for the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency. So basically it's just the idea of, well, not let's why base the entire economic infrastructure on one currency, the U.S. dollar? Why not base it on 20 different currencies? And then the differences between them tend to average out, and you don't have a collapse of one currency leading to a domino collapse of the entire chain of events. But again, I think that we're a few years off from seeing anything like this actually coming into place.
I think it's more a theoretical consideration. It may very well be there, but I don't think it's being widely used, Larry. Anything else?
Well, you know, Mr. Corbett made a statement at the beginning of his talk, which tied right into this. He said the global government is sliding in behind the scenes by economic means. And this is exactly what I think this stuff is. And when I read about these wokus, I said this is just another thing that's coming along to knock the props out under the dollar as being the world reserve currency.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I think the tragedy is so many people have their money invested in this, in various sort of hedge funds or in retirement funds that are all tied to the dollar. And when the dollar is destroyed, then their life savings will be destroyed as well. Okay, and I think I share your concern. Anything else you'd like to ask?
No, I was just interested in his opinion as to what these things were, because another thing that caught my I and Dr. Cuddy's description, as he said, it was introduced as a derivative of the exchange rates. So if these things are derivatives, they're probably not registered anywhere. Nobody knows how many millions or billions of dollars of them there are, and it would seem they are risk instruments. Would Mr. Corbett disagree with that, or does he think that's true?
I don't know enough about the mechanics of how, when, and who is creating these instruments to be able to pronounce on that. My understanding was that this is not that type of instrument, but I could be wrong on that, so I'll look into that some more and perhaps even have someone on my program to talk about the woku.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Great.
God bless.
Thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. You must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that the people who are running the world are trying to figure out how to keep this thing together until they can establish their dictatorship. Right? They're not that many of them, but they're very well organized. They control the media. They have their people in the army. They have their people in banking. They control banking. They control certainly the major corporations. They control both political parties, our educational system, our religious organizations, and the mass media so that they can control what the American people think. But there's not that many of them, and they just keep bringing these people back over and over and over again. They don't know exactly what they're doing, but they're dedicated to one thing: the destruction of sovereignty, the destruction of America, the destruction of our financial system, the destruction of Christianity. They know exactly what they're against, but they're not sure exactly how to run this thing. At least this is my impression. And they're simply going on, whether it be SDRs or WACOs or whatever it would be. Maybe they don't call it WACO differently, but WACO. Anyway, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, James, certainly it looks like China is having financial problems. I mean, basically, their economy seems to be drawing back. They're not exporting as much as they have in the past. And they have certainly gotten tremendous amounts of raw materials over there. They built whole cities, and there's nobody in the cities. And we're talking about cities for 5-10 million people, all sitting empty. And basically, they've not been able to develop their middle class, which they hope to do, as rapidly as they'd hoped. What are your thoughts on Japan as far as their economic downturn? Is this real, or will they be able to pull this off?
Well, while we're speaking about China, I think on the note of the woku and other similar types of proposals for a new international currency, I think that it's important to note that China and Russia and several other countries have been talking for years now about how important it is to get off of the U.S. dollar reserve standard. And that's a pretty important thing for a country that has literally trillions of dollars of U.S. dollar reserves in its foreign reserve accounts to be talking about. And again, on that note, I want to draw people's attention to the BRICS conference that's going to be taking place in Durban in South Africa in March, which is absolutely potentially going to be a game-changing thing for the world economy, where the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, are supposed to launch the new BRICS Development Bank, which is supposed to be an alternative to the IMF World Bank infrastructure, which currently undergirds international infrastructure development. And once again, I think that it's important to note that they may be trying to capitalize this bank on their own terms with some of their own gold holdings, and that might explain some of the recent buying frenzy for gold that we've seen in China and Russia, etc. So I think they may be trying to actually move on some of this rhetoric. We've had China's, for example, in the past proposing SDRs, the IMF special drawing rights, as an alternative to the U.S. dollar reserve. They may actually just be trying to circumvent that altogether and create their own new type of currency or some equivalent at the BRICS Development Bank launch. So that's something to keep an eye on this year that could be really a game-changing event.
Well, it almost appears, if you look at it, that our leaders are doing everything they can to destroy the value of our currency, and certainly by printing more and more and more under the guise of, well, we've got to actually stimulate the economy, so we'll just keep pouring money in. Well, of course, anybody could be fabulously wealthy or at least live like a millionaire if they just kept living on borrowed money. But sooner or later, why, the day of reckoning comes. And yet that's exactly what our leaders are doing. And they're going to say, oh, we didn't have any idea what was going to happen. Of course they have an idea what's going to happen. There are people on the Federal Reserve Board are speaking out and saying, don't you realize this is going to result in inflation? But, of course, the leaders seem to have their own agenda, and that has nothing to do with preserving our financial system. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And my fear is The American financial system is under attack today, and certainly within the next couple of years, what the value of our dollar, I think, will be markedly diminished. What are your thoughts, James? Do you think the dollar is on the way down?
I think it is. I think this is something that's pretty much universally understood at this point. It's really just a question of how the transition away from the dollar as the international standard reserve currency happens. And I think we can see a lot of different ways that could happen. It could be some sort of orderly transition so that most people won't really notice it. But I don't think that's the most likely scenario. I think that when you see a global reserve suddenly not being a global reserve, there's going to be a period of chaos, really, in the markets. And I can't imagine how that won't significantly affect people around the globe, and of course people in America, because really the way that the American government has functioned with its trillions upon trillions upon trillions of dollars of debt and continuing to print more debt like there's no tomorrow, that has only been sustainable because the U.S. dollar is the global reserve currency, and that basically people are always hungry to buy U.S. bonds and treasuries. But if it loses that status, there's no way that you could imagine China and other countries continuing to buy that. All that would be left is the Federal Reserve continuing to buy the treasuries outright. So I think we're already seeing that, as the Federal Reserve became the largest holder of U.S. Treasuries back in 2010, I believe.
Well, let's go to Jim, who's calling us from Pennsylvania. Hi, Jim. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I had a comment about the vacant cities in China. I think a possible scenario, I don't know how probable it might be, is that with economic collapse, you have people trading in this country guns and ammo for food, and then going to FEMA camps, and from there being deported to those cities in China, which will provide labor for the Chinese. Like I said, it's a possibility. I don't know how high, but I thought I'd like to add that.
All right, fine. It's an interesting thought. I don't think it's going to happen, but who knows? We live in a world gone mad. Anything else, Jim?
That's about it, and good luck with the new IF. I used to contribute at times rather heavily to that when Bob was alive.
Well,
good luck, James Corbett, with your project.
Okay, fine. Thanks, Jim. Telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there and you have a question or comment for our guest, James Corbett, I think it's important that you realize that our financial system that we've had and has really stood us in good stead for well over 200 years is on the verge of collapse. When Jimmy Carter left the presidency and Ronald Reagan came in, we had $1 trillion in national debt. When George W. Bush became president, we had about $5.7 trillion in national debt. When George W. Bush left the presidency after 8 years, we had $10.7 trillion in national debt. Today, we have over $16.4 trillion in national debt, and it's screaming higher. Certainly, Obama is creating more than $1 trillion of debt a year. It took us 100 years, of course, to get to that point. This is part of a long-range plan, in my estimation. You can read about it by two communists named Cloward and Piven, 1966, National Review, the Nation magazine. And they basically said, we'll destroy America by first suspending it into oblivion. And then out of the chaos that comes, we can establish our wonderful utopian society. James, could that be possibly what this is about?
I think this is what it is aiming at, and what Jim said there is a possible scenario. I mean, I don't know about shipping people off to China for slave labor, but I certainly do think that there is the possibility that in a collapse there will be that type of offer. Well, you give us your guns and ammo, and we'll give you food and a place to stay kind of trade-off that we could imagine that a populace that has been beaten into submission and really just wants the stability of the life they once knew would gladly trade their freedom for security, which is the old tyrannical canard. So I can see something like that taking place, and that's why people have to be prepared to live without that assistance and to not take that deal if and when that time comes.
I don't think most people want to hear that we're going to have a collapse here. I don't think most people want to hear that bad times are coming. Everybody wants to hear that things are getting better, and that's what they keep telling us. And I don't think they're telling us the truth. Do you?
I certainly don't. And they've been caught lying over and over and over basically every time a politician opens his or her mouth. So I don't know why we should trust them on this count at this time.
Oh, James, if we've got just a moment or two here, what's the message you'd like us to leave with our listeners out across America?
Well, this is, as I'm sure everyone knows, this is a time where they're attempting to use crisis as a means of governance. So basically, they're trying to create crisis and hype and panic in the population so that they can implement new measures and bold new ways of doing things. This is why we saw the political brinksmanship over the fiscal cliff deal. This is why we're seeing the exact same thing playing out with this debt ceiling deal that's coming into place. This is what we're seeing with the gun control debate. And all of these other debates are spurred on by crisis, panic, and hype. So I think the most important thing that people can do right now is not to play into that panic that they're trying to feed, because they will always come along with phony solutions for you to try to offer a deal to the public. Just give us a little bit more of your liberty and we'll make it all better for you. I think people have to stay away from that, have to understand that it is their personal responsibility to take their family's security and their loved ones' security into their own hands, and to do what they can to get prepared and divest themselves of their part in this system that unfortunately is becoming more and more tyrannical by the day. There's a lot of different ways that people can do that, as we've talked about before, but it's more and more important, especially, I think it'll become more and more evident over the course of this year. Even the people who haven't woken up yet are going to start waking up as we start to see some of the bold moves that they're going to implement in the name of security over the course of the next year. So hopefully more people will be hearing this message, and we can all work together to try to create communities that will be able to survive without this federal and even global interference.
I think that's a very interesting consideration, that we'll actually become more dependent upon our local community, but we need to begin to work upon that right now to make sure that we have people in positions of power in our local communities who understand the implications of what's coming down the line, that we have people sitting within our sheriff's department, our police department, who understand the importance of local control and certainly trying to survive locally, which we're no longer able to depend upon the national government, because, of course, the financial system collapses, everything collapses. Parting thought, and then we'll let you go, James.
Well, again, I just hope that people are aware of what's going on. And for all of those people like Jim, who was calling in before, who have been subscribers or have followed the International Forecaster in the past, I certainly hope they'll at least check out the free introductory copy that you can get through the internationalforecaster.com as the Forecaster is preparing to go to back to bi-weekly.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James, you was just saying you said the forecast, you're preparing what now?
Preparing to go back to bi-weekly, so it'll be coming out on Wednesdays and Saturdays, coming in the next month, in February. So I hope people will be prepared for that as we ramp things back up at the International Forecaster. Again, trying to fill the incredibly vast vacant shoes that were left by our dearly departed Bob Chapman, but we're doing the best we can to carry on that legacy and to continue informing people about what's really happening.
And you're doing a great job, and I'm sure Bob would be very, very happy to see how things are going and looking after his wife. Anyway, God bless. Thanks very much, James. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, this is...